Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators, and we've all been working for about the last 25 years. We've worked with just about every major publisher and publication in the business, and together we've published somewhere around 50 books, and we have all at one time taught illustration at the university level.
Yep. Each week we're going to bring you a different topic where we are going to either agree or argue, but either way, you're going to learn something new.
All right. Good intro, everybody. Okay. So this episode today, I was thinking we haven't ever tackled the intro to our podcast has three things: how to do illustration, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact with the world with the art. And we really haven't tackled how to make that impact in the world with the art. And so I wanted to talk about that today. Today's my topic. And I thought I would kick it off with asking you guys a question. What work have you done? It could be a singular piece or it could be a body of work that has had the most impact in the world. And I don't mean like, you know, it fixed global warming, but, you know, but like has had the most impact. What have you created? What have you put out into the world that has had an impact?
Will, go ahead.
Oh boy. I was waiting for you. Okay. That's interesting. I don't know what thing I've done that has, obviously I can't answer that question scientifically, but the children's books that I've been privileged to work on have been written by other people, but I feel like I've brought a lot to the table as far as telling their story or helping to make that the stories that I've illustrated more clear. And one in particular, my latest one, Bonaparte Falls Apart, and the sequel book that I'm working on now is really an anti-bullying theme, but it's not. It's not overt. Like the story holds up, the stories hold up on their own, which I love. And I would say they inadvertently teach kids how to be more empowered. And I, because those books are doing well, and there's even a hint from my editor of the third book, which is really exciting because I'm just finishing up the second one right now. Like mop up.
They hinted?
Yeah, they hinted. Yeah. They said, well, on the next one, we'll make sure it's easier than this one, because the one that I'm currently working on has got a baseball theme, and instead of just the monsters, now there's a whole other team, the aliens, and we had to keep everything straight in the book as far as this. There's a game being played, and the right people have to be in the right positions in the field, and some people swap out positions like pitchers and stuff, and it's been really tough to make sure that the right people are running the bases or in between bases, and so when they came back with a bunch of changes, like, don't worry, the next one will be a lot easier. So, and they had never talked about a third one yet. So that was pretty cool. But as far as impacting the world, I think pretty much everybody, every kid experiences bullying. And even the kids that are the bullies are probably bullied at home. And so I think it's a really important message to help kids, you know, become empowered and overcome, and how they can deal with those emotions in a positive way and how they can solve those things. And I remember, I know I've talked about this before on here, but the Francis books had a kid who was a bully. And I think I talked about this before. If you don't know those series that I'm talking about, the Francis books, you can look them up on Amazon, and they're, I'm pretty sure they're still in print, but when I was young, my mom would read those to us. And I actually had an epiphany in when she was reading one of those stories, because I had three sisters and I teased my sisters, and sometimes I was a bully. And I remember seeing the impact of the bullying, because in the book, one of the Francis characters, I believe they're groundhogs or badgers. I think they're badgers, actually. They're badgers. The sister goes off and is crying alone in one of the books. And it really tugged at my heartstrings. And I know it was impactful, because I can remember it 50 years later, you know? that I remembered having the thought, like, crap, I've done this to my sisters. Like, I'm the bad guy in this story, you know?
God.
Yeah, I know.
That's a very eye-opening moment.
So, like, and it was a children's book that taught me that lesson. So you I don't think you can ever quantify how much impact you have with your art, but yeah. And I do have another story if you want it, but I'm going to let Lee go.
Let's have Lee go.
So this is tricky where I know what I'm going to say, but we've done so, us three have done so many recordings of in different capacities. I've told this story before, but I don't know if it was on the podcast.
Or would
but I'm going to add to it.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been anywhere in the last couple of years. I think maybe it was here, but I don't know. I'll just rehash this one and then I'll elaborate on it. So I think where I've made the most difference or where I've felt the most difference hasn't actually been with my books, although I'll elaborate on that in a second. I think it's a personal connection with a lot of the just one-off images that I've done that, you know, momentary thing strikes my inspiration and I make something. And then I go to these art fairs and show it. And there's this one time, and I know you guys know the story, where I was getting ready to close and this woman came up. She was just thumbing through the prints and that always happens. And I'm kind of waiting for her to leave the booth so I can start tearing down. And she just gets stuck on this one image and she holds it in front of her and just tears start coming down her face. And I noticed she's crying. I'm like, oh my God, what did I do? what's wrong? And she said that she was looking at this picture of this girl swinging real high on the swing, that's hanging down from a tree. And her sister had died when they were little. I think they were twins and had died when they were young. And her sister, she just remembers her sister swinging like that and just loved to swing. And I hugged her and she was just bawling and I gave her the print and it was just such a personal connection. One of the most powerful moments of my career. And it was so big. And so that's just one example of it, but you know, on a more, I don't want to say day to day because I don't do art fairs day to day, but more consistent basis, what I get is this is really fun, is that older people will come into my booth and more often than not, they'll kind of stop and they'll look around and they have this kind of starry look in their eye. And I remember this one lady coming up to me and I was just like, let me know if I can answer any questions for you. And she's like, I remember this. And I was like, oh, have you seen it somewhere before? And she was talking about the feeling of being young. And it was so cool. She was like, it wasn't just one image or one book that she remembers or something like that, but it was just the overall thing. And I make my images a lot out of, most of the time my feeling is like, I just really want to make this image. I want to have fun. I mean, I like to do stupid stuff and there's just a lot of stupid stuff in my images and whimsical stuff and I don't know, I've seen that happen a lot with older people that come in the booth and it just gives them this kind of shot that they haven't maybe thought about for a really long time or it just hasn't been part of their life and they leave smiling and I just love that.
That's super cool. I like that. I wanted to, I guess for me personally, one of the things that I inadvertently did that I think made some sort of impact in the world was started an art challenge called Inktober. And the initial idea for the challenge wasn't to impact the world. It was just so that I could get better at drawing with ink. And what I did was I easily could have just said, I'm just going to practice drawing ink and you guys can follow along and watch me practice. But I turned it into a challenge for myself and I invited other people to join along if they wanted to as well. And I just made like parameters or rules for the challenge. Like you draw an ink drawing every day for the month of October and you post it online and you share it with other people. You add the hashtag Inktober so other people could see all the Inktober drawings. And what started out as a single individual doing a sort of a self-improvement, art improvement challenge turned into like thousands and thousands and thousands of people taking on the challenge and doing it. And every year I get emails from people that say, you have no idea how much this challenge has helped me with my creativity. It's helped me break out of my, you know, my artist block. It's gotten me to draw for myself again. I used to do that all the time and I kind of forgot how to do that. You know, a lot of times I hear that from professionals. They're like, I've just been drawing so much for work that I forgot why I like drawing, and that sort of unlocked that for them. And then there's other people too who said, you know, I improved so much from just doing this every day for a month, and I actually got better as an artist. And the other comment I get a lot is, I got all these new followers, right? Like all these people started following that had never followed me before, because I consistently showed up every day and posted artwork daily. And so that was something that I had no idea what I was doing when I got into it. And now that I see what's going on with it, I'm trying to, you know, actively promote it more, participate more, and, you know, try to get as many people to do it as possible, or to make it at least way more accessible than it's ever been. And so that's, I would say that it's even interesting, like, you know, out of everything that I've done, I've done children's books, I've done graphic novels, I've worked on animated films. So many people refer to me as the Inktober guy, where at first I was just like, no, I'm not the Inktober guy. It's like, I'm so much more. I'm all this other stuff. And now I'm just like, well, whatever. If that's what I am, if that's my legacy, then sure, I'll take it. It's fine. It's whatever it is.
You are the Inktober guy. When we were walking in LA and we're crossing the street, and there's an Inktober sticker on the red light, you know, like on the base of it, holding it up. And me and Will are like, oh, Jake's famous. There's a sticker just randomly placed.
This, but he put it there earlier.
I knew it.
I'm like, guys, let's walk this way.
No, he didn't. That was pretty cool. But here's the thing. It's not fair for you to pull out stuff like Inktober, Jake, because the rest of us, we're never probably going to ever start something like that.
Well, first off, Will, it's not a competition. I keep telling you that. You and me, we're not competing. You might be competing with me, but I'm not trying to compete with you.
I'm not doing a very good job of it.
Yeah. No, but I wanted to ask you, what, and Lee kind of already answered this, but what work have you done has had the most impact on one other person? Not on the world, just on one other person. Let's hear it.
I mean, I've been very fortunate, as you guys have too. Like I look at it as like you have one success and then that leads to more success. So it's funny, because they call it the Pareto distribution, you know, right? Where you have, like, you know, a small amount of people doing the thing that they set out to do. And I've come to realize it's not from talent, it's not from anything other than you get little successes along the way and you build off those. And like, I've talked about this before on my YouTube channel, that, you know, the editorial market was a vibrant market and now it's gone. And that's largely what launched me. So with my students, I'm like, you can't follow in my footsteps because the water washed away the path that I went on, but there are other ways, you know? And so I guess what I'm trying to say is we've probably had a lot of situations where we've impacted someone else, where someone's come up and given us, you know, like a testimonial of how we affected them in some way. And I've had that happen a lot of different times, and I've been very fortunate to have that happen. But again, it's not, I mean, it's just, we just do what we do. And like I said, we've had these successes that we're able to build on over time, and they lead up to things. But the one that has made me feel really good is I've had a handful of people come up to me at comic convention shows and say, I have a table over there. And the reason I have a table over there is directly because of you. If I hadn't watched your YouTube channel and your series on how to table at a comic convention, and you showed, like, because I started by showing, like, hey, this is my first one, I have no idea what I'm doing, and I showed all my mistakes, and I said I was going to show all my mistakes, and I said I was going to show how much we made and how much I still owed and how upside down I was and how disappointing the first one was. And people got to see that, and they got to see the, you know, the 50th show where, you know, Wayne went to take the booth to Seattle and did amazingly well. And they saw that journey. And so there's been a handful of people that have watched those and said, "You changed my life. I'm here because of you." And that is so rewarding to be able to do something like that. And to have the internet to magnify and amplify your message. This is an amazing time we live.
Yeah, I mean, I think we get so many emails too. I'll just add to what Will's saying there through doing what we do as teachers. I mean, it's just so cool to see, you know, every now and again, and I won't say every now and again, actually a lot lately, we get these emails where people are like, "I got an agent. I just got my first book deal. It wouldn't have been without you guys talking so honestly about some of this stuff," or whatever. And just the fact that we're out there doing it and keeps them motivated in some way. And those are so nice when we hear that stuff from you guys, though. So we don't think that.
We'll get an email.
Yeah. Keep doing it. Yeah, keep
we'll
sending
get an
stuff.
Email once every other week or once a week, just talking about this podcast and how helpful this has been to people. And it's really rewarding. But again, it's like, I feel guilty in some ways because it's like success. I guess the point, I don't know if I'm making this point, but success begets success. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, it actually makes it easier to be successful when you have successes along the way. And what separates us from any artist that wants to, you know, have a career in art is, I mean, it's just the time that we've been doing it pretty much. Cause I really do feel like anybody that sets their mind to anything, almost anything, can accomplish that thing. I mean, you can't grow and become an NBA player if you're short, but there are so many things that you do have control over.
That didn't stop Spud Webb.
That is very true.
And I just think that the thing that people are battling today more than anything, where if you're thinking like, "Am I going to be able to impact the world with my art?" If you're listening to this and watching, the answer is yes, you can and you will. But what you have to be able to do is make sacrifices.
Yeah, especially early, those sacrifices are painful. Later, they become more minimal, I think, and you get to have a little more work-life balance. But you're right. I mean, it's gotta come from somewhere. It's tricky. I'd like to answer, since I answered the first one, the broad question with the singular answer, I'll answer the one about affecting one person with a broad answer. My books, this is kind of a bummer for me and something that I'm trying to work on now, but I like the books that I've done, but I haven't had the impact that I've wanted to on the audience. I don't feel like I've done the book that I'm made to do yet. And that's what's driving me to write. And that's what's driving me to turn down all this other work, which is so hard to do. And I feel like Will was saying, I feel guilty because I know so many people would love to do the book, some of the offers that we're getting. I'm like, "No, I'm writing my own. Go away." I feel so guilty for doing that, but I have to do that because I haven't had that impact for the book that I can hold up and say, "This is the book that I want
to
be out
there." You know the phrase, first world problems, right? So the first world problem for an illustrator like you is you're trying to explain to someone why you don't want to do the thing that you've set your life up to do. Right? Like when you turn down something from someone else, and they're like, "Wait, this is what you do though." And you're like, "Yeah, but right. I want to do more. I want to do my own thing."
Yeah. It just becomes more and more specific. That's the thing. Like earlier on in your career, and correct me if I'm wrong with you guys, but I mean, somebody could ask me to decorate the top of a cake and I'd be like, "All right, man, give me the icing. I'm going to try to do something cool." And it could be anything, you know, decorate a window, paint a window, you know, anything, editorial, books, whatever. And then now it's become so much more specific. And I didn't set out for it to be that specific. It's just kind of, you know, where your career takes you.
That's really good. So I got one more question for you guys. What work have you done that has had the most impact on you personally?
Well, for me, it's probably going to be the fan art. And I know probably there's a group of people that don't want to hear that. But it changed the style of art that I'm using in even in my children's books. This book series for Random House is based on the style change that I made for fan art.
That's really interesting. So what is the will before fan art?
The will before fan art, over illustrated. So this has also been kind of an evolution / maturing process of, I mean, my priorities were misplaced. I look at Lee's stuff and I'm like if you saw that he could paint delicious highlights and colors and reflected light and all, but he's in your style, Lee, you're choosing not to do that intentionally because you're trying to tell a story. That's probably the best example I can give to students coming up is like, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Right. And right. So for me, taking a step back and having editors say like your colorful illustration is neat. You know, it's like, do you have anything that's not like that though? And not understanding that some editors and art directors were basically trying to tell me you're over illustrating your backgrounds, you're putting too many colors in and emphasizing things that don't need to be emphasized. And it made me really reevaluate. And then going to comic conventions and looking around and seeing that's pretty much what every artist at Comic-Con does, is they try to hit you with as much color and as much bombast as possible. And I said, if I do that, I'm going to fit in and I don't want to fit in. And so I had to think of reinventing a style that wouldn't fit in. And in doing so, it gave me a style that worked for children's books.
Mm. What about you, Lee?
What was the question again? What thing has changed us the most?
Yeah. What work have you done that has had the most impact on you personally?
I think I was really a frustrated artist when I was in school because even though I was making images and I was starting to make some successes in my career, I just hadn't found the medium that I like. Acrylics were so frustrating for me. And because once I did the sketch, I'd be real excited about the sketch. And then when it came time to paint it, I'd feel like I was painting by numbers almost. You know, I was just filling in big blocks and nothing cool was happening with the surface and I didn't like it. And I tried pastel, I did oil, everything. I mean, and then one day I tried watercolor and man, it was just like I was off to the races. I mean, it was just so profound, those first couple of watercolors that I did. I found that when I was, the marks were happening on the page, I found that that's kind of my intuitive side of painting. Like it was happening like I was wanting it to happen. I don't know if that makes any sense. I wasn't having to force it. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I'd say that it wasn't one specific piece or anything like that, but it was just the process of discovering the right medium that matched my sensibility. And it was just, I mean, it was night and day from that point on.
That's super cool. I just realized that I never answered which impact.
I was going to ask that.
I moved on. So I'll answer that, and then I'll answer what pieces or what work has had the most impact on me as an artist. So I had done Missile Mouse, the graphic novel. This is about 10 years ago. And I put it out into the world, and you know, my goal for it was for it to be this huge success and New York Times bestseller, and everybody would want more Missile Mouse, and it sold fine, and it did all right, and didn't do any of that. You know, I was thinking it'd be great if Pixar saw Missile Mouse and was like, "That's our next movie project," you know, and stuff like that. That was the kind of impact I wanted to make with Missile Mouse. And one day I got an email, this is maybe a year after it came out, from a woman who said that her son was really sick, hospitalized, you know, dealing with some sort of illness that was just something a kid shouldn't have to go through. And she said the one thing that gave him like pleasure and made him happy was reading the Missile Mouse comic. And I was like, and she just wanted to thank me for making it, for putting it out there. And I, that like stopped me in my tracks. And I just realized, like, you're so dumb. Like, it doesn't matter how worldly successful Missile Mouse is or any project you make is, so long as it has, you know, so long as it makes someone happy or it improves someone's life to some degree, just one person. And that right there can make it worth it, make it worth the time and effort that's gone into it. So that was my, I think, you know, one of my impact stories for how one thing, you know, something I made an impact in one person's life. And I've got, you know, other things like my YouTube channel. I get comments in person all the time, like, thank you so much for your videos, Jake. They've really helped me and, you know, helped me unlock some of my misgivings about working in art and wanting to do better, you know, improve my craft. And that's great too. I want to say though that the piece of work that impacted me the most was probably, you know, there's been different stages in my career where I needed a piece of art to really impact me. I would say, you know, I could name a handful of them, but probably one of them would be the first real perspective drawing I did in seventh grade. And what that was me learning a new technique or principle of art and sitting down and trying my hardest and working my hardest to make this thing like the best that I could make it, and really like unlocking and understanding how perspective works. And when I finished that piece, you know, I thought it was incredible. I loved it. You know, I couldn't believe I could draw like that. And I turned it in, and the art teacher, you know, really appreciated it and gave me good marks on it. Looking back at that piece, I've seen it. I've since, you know, revisited that piece when I was going through an old box at my mom's house a couple of years ago. I was like, oh my gosh, I was proud of this. You know, there's nothing special to it. But that piece, what that taught me was I could learn how to do art. I wasn't, you know, art just wasn't, you know, it's weird to say this. It wasn't just like a hobby, fun thing to do, but it was like, this is something you can learn to do, get good at, and devote your life to, right? And so that piece had a huge impact on me.
When you started making your first lists?
My first list right after that. I made a list of the list of things I wanted to learn.
I make fun of Jake's list, you guys. So sorry, Jake.
All the time. All right. So the reason I asked those three questions: what have you created that has impacted the world? What have you created that has impacted one other person? And what have you created that has impacted you? I wanted to share them in that order because there's a common thread in all of these. And the main thing is, and the way that you're ever going to make an impact is you have to actually make something. You have to create something. And it doesn't have to be awesome. It doesn't have to be good. My perspective drawing was okay. It wasn't awesome. It wasn't amazing. You know, if I posted it on, if there was Instagram back then and I posted it, it wouldn't have gotten any likes, right? It would have gotten like a support like from my sister or something. But the impact first can only happen if you create something, if you make something and put it out into the world, okay? And today we have like so many opportunities and resources available to us to share what we create with the world, that, you know, it's kind of not an excuse saying I don't have an audience or I don't have, you know, a platform to share things on. All you have to do is sign up for any, you know, social media or buy a domain name and post a blog on there and just start sharing it. I think the key though is the order to this is number one, learn your craft. Here's my list. You ready for this?
All right, let's go.
Learn your craft, and share it. Create something, do something, or make something and share it. And then the next level, I think, is to teach people how to do what you've learned to do. Just by showing someone how to do the thing that you've learned is probably the easiest, most straightforward way to make a one-to-one impact with someone. So there's that. And then I think the fourth thing to this is just always be engaging with people, asking questions, answering questions, be a part of whatever community it is that you've chosen to be a part of. So it's those four things. Learn your craft, then create something from it. And I don't mean like, I mean, actually, like if you look at Lee's example and Will's example of doing art fairs and comic cons, you know, they're just making flat pieces of artwork and they were sharing that. It wasn't like a full on graphic novel or a book. It was just flat artwork. And that in itself was enough to get, you know, an emotional response from people or a reaction from people. So create something. You could even take it a next step further and create something that shares a message that you believe in. It could be a story that you want to pass on to people. It could be any sort of medium that you love and that you want to be a part of. And then teach someone else how to do that. Anything else you guys want to add to that?
I'd like to throw out a sharing pet peeve, and I wanted to see what you guys think about it. This is something that I noticed recently and it happens with a lot of either younger artists or people earlier in their career. And that is the discount share, where they put something up. And I understand the feeling of not being comfortable doing something. I mean, I definitely can sympathize with that, and I think that's fine. But what I see, the text that I see go along with all this is like, here's something I made. It's not very good, or just messing around. Here it is. Sure. Like they discount it. Right, the self-deprecating share before you have a chance. And I know what that's about. It's before you have a chance to dog it. They've already dogged it, so they're not on the line.
Well, you know what I call it? It's the social media disease that every YouTube video starts out with. This is how I would do it, but you don't have to do it this way. And you might think that the way I'm doing it is dumb, but it's just the way that I do it. It's like right. All this preemptive discussion.
Or acting like it doesn't matter, or you just flipped it out. It's no big deal. It doesn't matter. And I just don't like that. I mean, I think putting it out there saying, here's a sketch. I made it because of this. Like, here's what inspired the sketch. Like, that's a great thing to put in there. You did the sketch or painting doesn't have to be great. I don't care about that. But I do want it to be, I want it to feel authentic, the stuff that people are sharing. And I want them to at least somewhat care about the thing that they're sharing. I don't care about the quality. I just care about the intent behind it.
Another question would be, how do you avoid the feelings of wanting to kill yourself when one out of 1,000 people tell you they don't like your thing or that it's bad, that it's not good?
Like, how to get around that?
Yeah. How do we stop? How do we not listen to that one voice in the crowd? So there's a sea of encouragement, and then there's that one person, and all we think about all day.
I would set a numeric goal for getting those. Like when I first started submitting book dummies and stuff, I had a goal of getting like at least 50 rejections. And that was my goal. So when I get one, I'd be like, okay, that's number 7. Awesome.
That's a good way to do it.
So if you can get 100 comments that say it's bad or whatever, the bad comments, then and then take those and frame them and just say, these are people that don't matter to me. I don't know.
We met with, when we started SVS, before you joined us, Lee, we went over and got introduced to a company called Chatbooks. And if you're an Instagram user, a regular Instagram user, you probably heard of the company called Chatbooks, C-H-A-T Books. And their idea is really simple. It was to create little scrapbooks that you could have on your coffee table, just of the pictures that you're taking. And their first generation.
You didn't explain that well. Basically, it hooks up with your Instagram account.
Well, I was going to work backwards. I was going to say their idea was to help you create.
All right. Keep going. Sorry.
I'm getting there.
It's done in a very, this is a very Will telling of this story.
Yeah.
You can't jump to the end before you give the beginning and middle. Okay.
Gee whiz.
Anyway, I'll try to do it quickly so I don't offend you guys. The idea that he had was, you're taking pictures on your phone. I want to get those pictures from your phone, the best ones, into a scrapbook that you can just enjoy. And I want to do it on a monthly, sort of semi-monthly. You can set it up for how often you want to get these books. But basically, as you're taking pictures, we will print this little book. So instead of you having, because you know how you don't go to get film developed anymore. And people often don't have the right paper in their printer. And so basically people were taking pictures and they could only view them online. So he was trying to solve that problem.
Right.
And the first generation, he created a website and it had all these people telling him, oh, that's a great idea. And then it didn't work and people weren't using it, the service. And so it failed. And so his, I can't remember exactly what his second generation was, but he rolled out a whole brand new second generation. I mean, this is taking a lot of time and money for this guy to develop this company. But on his third generation, he realized that he had to make it so easy and automated that people, it was people proof. So right. He linked it to Instagram, where, because he realized, and other people were giving him criticism all along the way and telling him that his other ideas, he was getting people that were saying, yeah, it's good. But then those people weren't using it. Then he had other people going, nah, this isn't working because you're relying on people to actually do something to set their book up and it's too complicated. So he hooked it up to Instagram because you're already self-curating on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So basically the idea is every picture that you take on Instagram, you've taken probably 10 or 20 or 30 that you didn't post because you've already edited and curated. So he's just going to automatically populate these books. Once you get to a certain number of pictures, their company will print and send you a little mini chat book, a little book of your stuff. And so the reason I thought of that is we all have done things that have failed. But it's the person who keeps going, who has their vision and knows they're on to the right track, you know, who keeps going. Those are the people that are successful with their art.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's, and just know that no matter what you do, it could have been the third version of chatbooks. That was the first version. And he still would have got criticism. I mean, people criticize everything. And I mean, it could be the most perfect thing ever. And somebody would say something. And so you just, I mean, hopefully everyone's savvy enough to know that. I mean, read some Amazon reviews if you don't believe me. I mean, find something that you love and read an Amazon review about that thing. It's pretty funny. I mean, even our podcast, which is the most perfect podcast. We were joking about what we had, 1-star review a couple of weeks ago. Uh-huh. I mean, it's just going to happen. I can't remember what they said. I think they said something about Will.
It was me. I'm like the banker dragging you guys down.
they can't handle his storytelling style.
Like, no, I think they were like,
he rambles forever.
It was funny. They said, what did they say? They said, for people who talk about being so organized, these guys aren't organized at all, which I thought was fair.
It's true. Do you have that saved?
I can say it somewhere.
You haven't memorized.
We need more negative comments so we can do a podcast on our negative comments.
I wish I could give a 1-star comment. I wish we could rate the comments so we could give their 1-star comment a 5-star rating.
The thing is, it proves that we all like the media. We've all gravitate to things. And so you talk to people that consume Netflix and we're all watching different things. And of course there's overlap, but there's people that will look at what you're watching and go, I hate that. And yet that is the perfect show for someone else. So our podcast is perfectly wrong for some people and perfectly right for other people. And if we changed it to try to make it perfectly right for everyone, we would fail.
Yeah, it would. Nobody would like it.
Right.
Because it'd be, you know, it's trying to cover too many bases. Mm-hmm. Our podcast is for the people who just want to listen in on basically a conversation happening between three people who love to draw and love to paint and do art.
Like, we're pretending that you're here with us right now. And if we knew your name, we would say, well, yeah, Sally, what do you think? You know?
It's true. There is no distinction between our conversations between us three and then our actual podcast.
In fact, sometimes we forget to record.
I want to also add to that failure thing that you were talking about. I've heard of this before, and I don't know if I made it clear, but I was doing Inktober for like 3 or 4 years before it actually like took off. You know, it was me showing up every year and like, I'm just going to do this again. I'm going to do this again. And even like the second year I got in an accident and it didn't happen that year. I did it 2 drawings before I quit, but, and I could have just ended right there and got on to something else, but I decided to stick with it and keep going. And because of that, and I think because of the timing with social media and artists coming onto Instagram, it developed into this thing that's kind of big, mm-hmm. you know? So,
well, can I reverse engineer something though? Because we're talking, yeah. The topic is about changing the world. Do you guys make images to change the world, or do you make images because you're interested in something and they happen to change the world?
The best way to not change the world is to make an image to change the world.
Very true. Well, that's kind of where I was going with it. I mean, like, to have such grandiose, when Jake announced the topic to me, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to say anything during this podcast because I don't, you know, I had to really think about it. Like how the rest of the world is getting affected by the art. Cause I'm just interested in the art.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, my friend Rick Walton used to say, the author, children's book author used to say, if you set out to, and he doesn't have a really concise quote or anything, but he would basically say, if you set out to teach a moral in your story, you'll almost always fail. Like the moral should actually, like you should set out to tell a really fun and interesting story. And then if it teaches a moral, that's a benefit because now you can market it with that moral. But if it doesn't, it's probably still, it's just a good story. But if you set out to teach a moral, almost always your story structure will fail.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good advice. Yeah. It becomes like too didactic where it's like, I get it. You're beating me over the head with it. I understand. I know where this is going. You know,
yeah, you can see it a mile away.
The root of all evil is money. I got it. You know, this is not fulfilling me. I think though, if you start out with, and we were talking about this earlier today, Will, if you start out with maybe a question or a statement, you know, a proposition to hang your story on, an armature to build on. So you could say, I just want to talk about money as the root of all evil. That turns into, you know, that can inform everything you want to do in the story, but it doesn't mean it is your story, right? Yeah. Good point. I think that's all I had to say about this. If you guys had anything else to add, I think I'm good on it.
Yeah, I gotta go change the world. I gotta get out of here.
I just want to throw out a few ideas though. We've basically outlined the you know, areas where we've had our experience and what you need to do as a creator to make impact. I like Will's point, like don't set out to make an impact. Just by creating and sharing who you are and sharing your you know, your stories and your experience, you're going to make an impact. But here's some, if you're wanting a list of things to do, here's what I would do. Work towards being able to do an art fair or a Comic-Con. I would have that be on your list of things to check off as a, you know, as an artist. You learn a lot from that, especially if you want to be a professional artist. You learn so much from doing one of these things because you actually, you know, so much of your art is shared online these days, and you get like, there's this wall between you and people, this digital wall between you and people. And when you are out actually face to face with people showing your art, you get a much more honest, I think, response to what your work, and maybe not honest, but a genuine response where people either aren't interested and they don't want to, you know, give you the time of day. They just want to keep moving on, or something about it piques their interest because there's so much about body language that you can understand. You can tell when someone's like, you know, like looking at it, trying not to offend you, and someone who's like really interested.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I would put on your list to do some sort of Comic-Con or an art fair. The other thing I would do is maybe start your own personal art challenge, not with the idea of having it take over the world and have a million people do it, but with the idea that this art challenge will improve you. And even if you get one other person to do it, that's one other life that's impacted because of something you did. So start a personal art challenge. It might be a 30-day thing. It might be, you know, the drawing a week challenge. I'm going to do 52 drawings this year. It might be, you know, a painting a day for, you know, 30 days. It might be a portrait, you know, portrait challenge, something. I don't know. You're creative. You solved that problem for yourself. But I would start some sort of personal art challenge and share that with other people. The other thing you could do is if you learn something about art, we talked about teaching others, like actually set up an appointment or some sort of get together. You can go on Facebook and say, we're meeting at my house and I'm going to show you guys how to draw perspective. And that's a good way to engage with other artists or engage with people who are in art. It doesn't have to be perspective. It could be, you know, we're going to draw anime characters today. I don't care whatever it is that you know how to do. I would try that out. And then the last thing I would do is try doing, this is something we haven't talked about, but I started a thing called Art Drop Day. I didn't come up with art drops, but I just started a thing called Art Drop Day where one day out of the year, it's the first Tuesday in September, you create a piece of art and you leave it somewhere with a note that says, you know, congratulations, you found my piece of art. This is your art to keep now. You could do whatever you want with it. You can give it to someone else. You can put it on your wall. And if you like my art, you know, come look at my social media account or my website or something like that. But doing something like that, it's just a fun way, and it doesn't even have to happen on Art Drop Day, but doing an art drop is just a fun way to engage almost anonymously with your community physically where you live and putting your art out there. And maybe they contact you and say, oh, thank you for this piece of art. But regardless, whoever finds it, they can't not be impacted by something you've done. So if you want to make some sort of impact, you know, this week, try doing just an art drop, make something, print out a print, you know, make a little zine, you know, do a drawing and leave it at the library, leave it in one of your favorite books at the library, or leave it, you know, at your favorite copy shop on the window, tape it to the window, do something like that. And that right there it's going to brighten whoever's day that found that piece of artwork. So that's one of my recommendations as well. Is there anything you guys want to add to that?
One last little thing, and you pretty much kind of covered it, but I just want people to think like if you reverse engineer someone who is super successful in changing the world, just keep in mind that they had to learn their craft by doing the mundane stuff that wasn't changing the world. So think about doing the basics and the fundamentals as your preparation for doing something that will change the world.
Very good. Cool.
Like it.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up. Thank you for joining us, everybody. 3-Point Perspective is made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. Your hosts have been Will Terry. You can find his artwork online at willterry.com and give him a follow on Will Terry Art and Instagram at Will Terry Art. And if you're already following him, comment on one of his posts this week. Just say, Will, you're doing a good job. Keep it up. And we like what you're doing. Okay, do that for me. All right, that's a way to make an impact in Will Terry's life. Next up, we got Lee White. Go find his artwork at leewhiteillustration.com. And yeah, if you want to follow him, he's at Lee White Illo on Instagram. And I'm Jake Parker. I'm just kidding, Lee. No, leave a comment on Lee's Instagram too if you're not already following him. It's at Lee White Illo. And I'm Jake Parker. You can find my work at mrjakeparker.com, and I'm at Jake Parker on Instagram. Podcast edited by Alex Sugg. You can find more of his work at alexsugg.com. Show notes by Tanner Garlick. Tanner also does a great illustration for each one of our shows, so you can go to svslearn.com to see his podcast illustrations, and you can see the rest of his portfolio at tannergarlickart.com. And if you like this episode, please share it around. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can subscribe to us on Spotify. I kind of feel like if you have already heard this, you know how to listen to a podcast. So whatever platform you listen to podcasts on, hit that subscribe button so you can keep getting these episodes.
Are
if
we
like
going to upload to YouTube?
Yes, we should. We should do that. That's just like one more thing to do
live on the podcast so that you'd have more pressure to do that.
Let's make our new producer do it.
Yeah, maybe we'll do that. Okay. Yeah, our new producer, Aaron Painter, and you can find his work. Oh, you think Austin would? Okay. Man, the SVS team's just growing and growing. All right, I lost my script. We'd love to hear what you think about our podcast, so please leave a review wherever it is that you're finding this podcast, or you could just tweet to us if you want. All right, here we go. One last thing. If you're wanting to join in on the discussion of this particular episode, you can go to the forums at svslearn.com. They're free to join, and there we've posted this episode in its own thread, where you can chime in and let us know your thoughts about making an impact in the world with your art. And I think that's it. All right, everybody. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.